This is Kevin Conroy, and I am the goddamn Batman.
Hi, this is Dr. Andrea Letamendi.
And Brian Ward from the Arkham Sessions.
And you are listening to
Legends of the Dark Knight.
Hello and welcome to Legends of the Dark Knight. I am one of your hosts, Steve Drew, and Mike. Joining me is the Joker himself, Steve Megatron.
Hello.
In this latest Legends of the Dark Knight interview, we welcome Commissioner Gordon and Dr. Harlene Quinzel. The Arkham Sessions creators, Dr. Andrea Letamendi and Mr. Brian Ward.
Howdy.
Hello.
Yeah, I wrote that out earlier today. I'm like, oh, yeah, because I've seen Brian as Gordon, so I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, he does a good Commissioner Gordon cosplay.
Yep. It really just requires growing a mustache.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, so the Arkham Sessions is the latest and greatest podcast to hit the interwebs. It is Dr. Andrea Letamendi and Brian Ward from Shout Factory, and they are doing something that I don't think I've heard in these 7 or 8 years that I've either been podcasting or have been listening to podcasts. They are going through Batman the Animated Series and analyzing the psychology of it all.
Yeah, we figured we put her degree to good use. Her doctorate. You know, she spent enough time in school. Might as well use it.
Wow. Dang. All right. Man, that bus must hurt. Wow.
Oh, no, that's the biggest compliment I could give. You know, you could...
Well, we kid around. I mean, the truth is, all I talk about is Batman. And one of my favorite shows is Batman the Animated Series. So as Brian is trying to describe...
He's like, just get a podcast already.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about Batman all the time. I'm a clinical psychologist. I have a PhD in clinical psychology from UCSD. And I just really find that there's a lot of psychology in Batman. And recently, in the past, in the past year or so, I've been more and more talking about the psychology of Batman, the animated series, and the characters. That are in that show, and really Brian was just like, all right, you just need to get a podcast, because otherwise you're just talking to me about it. Other people need to hear,
which I enjoy. You know, we would
you make it sound like it's such a chore, Brian.
No, we would have like amazing conversations about it. To be honest, it really clicked for me when. Last October, Drea was in a documentary that Warner Brothers and DC Comics made called Necessary Evil, The Supervillains of DC Comics. And she was in there with writers, artists, comic creators, publishers, you know, her colleague, Dr. Langley. And it occurred to me that when they would cut to her, she was like the resident... Batman the Animated Series guru. Like, she remembers there are moments in that documentary where, if you're watching it, she's talking about like specific shots that she remembers from, say, Two-Face Part One and stuff like that. You know, just talking about like, I will never forget the moment I saw, you know, Harvey walk out of the hospital room and the lightning flash behind him. And I was like, you know, it's interesting because those filmmakers, even brought up the point that she really knows the animated series like exceptionally well. And you know, people analyze comic books all the time. They are either critics of comics or critics of television or whatever. But to be a clinical psychologist, to have the expertise to actually say this is what I would do if these people were my patients, is a unique gift. And you know, I'm very thankful to be a part of it with her.
Wow, that was really nice.
Oh, were you here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm still... That's just validating my geeky fandom.
That's right.
Is being appreciated and validated, which wasn't the case when I was a kid. So thank you for that.
Huh. So, Brian, it's been 4 years since we had you on a Geekcast Radio Network interview. So what have you been up to since we last chatted with you about the Beast Wars set?
Wow, was it about Beast Wars?
Yeah.
Yep.
Must have been a boring interview.
Right.
Right.
Hey, in the last 4 years, I've been working on Transformers Prime, which... You know, I guess I haven't really talked to you guys about it, but as far as I'm concerned, it's the greatest thing to ever carry the name Transformers. And this
Agreed.
Is this is coming from a G1 fan. you know, but it's literally everything that I grew up wanting to happen in a Transformers show. Right there, you know, there are moments of humor, but it's not a comedy. There are moments of darkness, but they're managed to balance the levity with it very well. And it's all the characters and I don't necessarily mean the character by name. I mean, like, this is the kind of character that I enjoy. And, right. And so I'm very sad that we're done producing those DVDs and Blu-rays. And they look beautiful. And some of the bonus features were some of the best that I've had a chance to work on. And then I've spent the last 2 years working on the Power Rangers, the 20th anniversary Power Rangers collection. So
that's a massive set.
Yeah, 98 discs total, and all in a gigantic helmet. And
I was gonna say, talk about a set with a giant ego on its head.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, man. You know, and that was a great joy for me because we did 6 discs of bonus material, and I literally couldn't have fit another minute onto those last couple of discs. So, you know, they were bulging at the seams, and that just means I had a lot of fun over the last 2 years. But you know, now I'm getting back into the swing of other shows and, you know, some stuff that sadly I can't talk about, but can't wait to. They're going to be some good sets this year.
Awesome. Now, the first time I heard you, Andrea, was way back. I don't even think this podcast is still going on. Way back on the Geek Girls podcast when you did their bullying episode. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a wild.
That was the first time I had ever heard you.
Gosh.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
I would say that's around the time, a couple of years ago, like 2 or 3 years ago, I started to enter the geek community in the sense that I would be speaking at conventions, you know, speaking on podcasts and really talking about the psychology of heroes and villains and comic books, science fiction, TV shows, things like that. And it's been a lot of fun. I always tell folks I don't consider myself to be in the industry. I'm kind of in the outside commenting and analyzing, if you will, what's going on. So I've talked about things like cosplay, the psychology of cosplay. I've talked about extreme fandom and collecting. I've talked about Star Wars, Batman, the animated series, Batman in general. So as I was saying earlier, it's really a chance for me to dovetail both my psychology, you know, professional interests as well as my geeky side.
And the expertise too. I mean, like, you know, the experience. Because when, I think the first panel I ever saw of Drea's was the panel that she calls the Superhero Battlefield. And to this day, I tell people about it because it was so interesting. Like, you know, you would start out, she would start out the panel with like a big image of Batman swinging through the city and explosions and all of that. And then she'd be like, you know, how many people in the room think this is fictional? This sort of thing is not happening in life. And, you know, most people would raise their hands, and then she would cut to like two videos from, you know, Afghanistan or Iraq with guys in, you know, dealing with IEDs buried in the ground, and, you know, real life Humvee situations where suddenly there's an explosion next to you and you're like, wow, these people exist. The people who have to get up, put on the body armor every day and go to work, and then they come home. And, you know, so she really enlightened me in that regard. So it just becomes that much more fascinating to listen to these professionals talk about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the Arkham Sessions, tell us the background story of that. How did this come about? Now, Brian, you said off air that you're like, just get a podcast already.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it really did start with that documentary that she did last year. Mm-hmm. You know, she and I would have conversations a lot about Batman, and I had seen a number of panels that she had done, but it really came down to, she's got a website, underthemaskonline.com, where she gets an opportunity to sort of, wax psychological about fictional heroes and villains, and it's an interesting read for sure, but her schedule just sort of doesn't allow for as many posts as she would like to do. So I was like, mm-hmm. Well, why don't we just do a 30 to 45 minute podcast every week, which gives you the opportunity, and we can go through one episode at a time, and we can treat them like they were sessions in Arkham Asylum. We set some ground rules. Basically, we are not, she knows the series much better than I, but we're not allowed to reference anything that we know happens. We are only allowed to reference what we have seen up to this point. So it gives us an opportunity to look at these characters and how they evolve over the course of however many episodes we get to watch them in.
And the challenge there, too, is that we're in the world of BTAS, so we also, as part of the rules, we're not allowed to reference other storylines and arcs and comic books and other films. Now, we do sometimes mention other versions, or if something, what just came out, and Bruce Timm's animated short just came out. So, of course, we had a moment to kind of talk about that.
Right. But yeah, the idea is that if you were Bill Finger writing Batman 75 years ago, or if you were Frank Miller, or you know, Scott Snyder now, all of these people write Batman differently. And you'll notice, you know, reading comics now, if you read a Batman title, he is one way. And if you read like the Justice League, he's a completely different way, because mm-hmm. it's just a matter of perspective. Within the Justice League, he's the jerk that stays by himself. No one really knows him. But if you're reading the Bat title, you get to know more about him because he's the person you're following. So really, it's a matter of perspective. So what we decided to do was we're going to stick to Batman the Animated Series, because this has a writer's Bible. And no matter how many writers are writing on it, they have to stick to this writer's Bible. So Batman can only be the way that Paul Dini and Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski dictated in this Bible, which gives us a sense of consistency, which is exactly the kind of thing Drea needs in order to analyze properly.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, with the show going on now, when I first found it, I think it was because I follow both of you on Twitter, and I listened to a number of episodes, and I'm like, wow. No one has ever really tried doing it this way. And it's by far the best analysis cartoon show I've heard in a long time.
Thank you. That's actually, that means a lot, because as Brian said, we weren't sure, you know, we had a few rules, we had some ideas, but I've never done a podcast before. Like I said before, I've guested on some podcasts, and I didn't know how much work would go into it. I didn't know if people would care. I didn't know if people would want to listen. But it's been a really exciting venture because, you know, we get to sit down and watch an episode. We talk about it. We write about it. We put a microphone in front of ourselves and then just analyze the, you know, we do talk about the story. We talk about how the episode opens. We talk about new characters. And then, you know, Brian will start asking psychological questions. Why would a villain, you know, behave that way? What would motivate them? Is that realistic? Is that kind of loss or trauma realistic? And how would someone, you know, react? So certainly when we have characters like Two-Face and the Joker and of course, Mr. Freeze, then we have quite a bit to talk about as far as the development of some of these really great villains. And with Batman the Animated Series, a lot of times we get their origin, which is hugely important when it comes to understanding their transformation into a villain and their motivations and reasoning for doing what they do.
What amazes me more than anything, I've got to be honest, you know, you guys know me as a DVD and Blu-ray producer. Mm-hmm. And I've spent a great deal of my 10 years with Shout Factory doing a lot of animated series. So when we sort of had the idea, I did think, because many of these episodes I hadn't actually watched since I watched them back in 92 and 93 you know, going forward, but, I did find myself wondering just how long can we go? Because after all, it's an animated series, it's a kids show, it's 22 minutes a piece. And once we got into it, Drea just started going off about like, oh, this character has this. This character is, you know, oh, I'm leaning toward this diagnosis. I'm leaning toward this. Oh, last time we saw this person, I thought it was this. Now I'm thinking it's closer to this. And I'm like, wow, we really could go on for a long time because there's a lot of depth that these writers put into the show, whether they realize it or not. Like,
well, there's a lot of depth, yes, but there's also a lot of depth in the way you're doing the show. Because most podcasts I know or that I've heard of doing a review style show will do 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 or even 6 episodes per podcast episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they'll make their shows 1 hour, 45 minutes or something. It's not going to be like a 3-hour show for 6 episodes, but, you know, they'll give their opinions and whatever else. But what you guys are doing is something completely different. You're going one episode at a time. So 22 yeah. minutes at a time.
Right.
Out of 108, 109 episodes, right. whatever the series is, you guys are going to be around for a while.
Well, and we might take little breaks. You know, we've talked about it where there might be occasionally where we'll do an episode on something else. You know, we haven't done any of that yet, but we always want to stick to Batman, but occasionally we understand that we might have to break it up a little bit. So, you know, every now and again there might be a special episode of, you know, whatever, whether it's, you know,
I'm thinking about some of the films.
Yeah, like the Nolan films or some of the DC animated titles or, you know, something along those lines. You know, we might take a brief break, but the core of the show will always be Batman the Animated Series, because it's the animated series that we grew up watching. Andrea has famously said, both on the podcast and in interviews, that it really was her gateway to not only Batman, but to psychology. So, you know, we're gonna ride that wave for as long as we can.
The one thing I'm hoping you guys get to eventually down the line is analyzing 6 characters.
Mm.
Batman, Superman, the Joker, Lex Luthor, Harley, and Mercy. You guys have to do World's Finest.
Yeah, that's one that I would be very interested in taking a look at some point.
Yeah.
That's such a deep, like, it's such a good story that you know, and this is, to be perfectly honest, I'm one of those people. Actually, I might be the only person. I don't know. I never really talked about it with too many people, but it really bothers me, the idea of Batman and Superman living in the same universe.
Okay, explain why this is. Why does this bother you, Brian?
It bothers me because the longer Batman and Superman are living together, Superman becomes a bigger jerk and Batman becomes less and less effective. I think that as characters, I get why DC put them together when they were in the beginning, you know, because they sold books and these were two of the most popular characters in the world. I get it. I think that one of the mistakes, and I say mistake loosely, knowing that DC would never do it, but when they relaunched the New 52 and were basically creating a new universe, you had the opportunity to not necessarily put characters together again. Batman is a real, you know, flesh and blood, Earth human with no meta powers of any kind. And he's on a singular mission to clean up Gotham City. Well, I personally blame Bob Kane and Bill Finger for the way I think. They basically, you know, I can't imagine a worse mistake than giving a superhero a mission statement. And if you say, I'm going to terrorize the criminal, the superstitious, cowardly lot, I am going to instill fear in them, and they will, you know, quiver, and they will stop doing all the things they're doing. You can't do that and still have a successful book, because there needs to be crime in Gotham City. And unfortunately, Batman is so ineffective at stopping crime, we still have common muggings in Crime Alley. We still have random shootings. These aren't just supervillains. These are actual just run-of-the-mill criminals who are theoretically terrified of the bat, but not enough to not commit the crime. So just how terrifying is the guy? And in every iteration of Batman, Gotham is worse and worse. So now not only is he not good at his job, they are overrunning Gotham City, and now he's got the Bat family of like 20 people helping him out, and they can't clean it up either. So, you know, and then keep in mind that just 100 miles away, Superman is hanging out at Metropolis, a clean city. He's got nothing else to do, so he's a journalist. Gotham needs Superman at this point, and the only thing keeping Superman from cleaning it up is Batman going, no, this is my turf. Is it? Like, you're not very good. So you know, I think if Superman and Batman were not living in the same universe, there would be no excuse. Batman would be a guy who was doing everything he could to keep Gotham.
He is doing everything he can. And I sort of look at Superman's role as one that has to kind of recognize the Prime Directive. You know, this version of the Prime Directive. He can't go in and sort of dismiss Batman's role and clean up Gotham. That's just not his way.
At this point, Superman is... I think you could be right, but I think at this point, Superman could either be, like, really lazy, or he could be letting all of the villains go to the one city. You know, it could be like, look, I'm cleaning up the rest of the world by letting them go there.
But at the same time, if you let them control everything and clean it up, you'd have the Justice Lords.
Well, that's yes, yeah,
because in that two-parter, Lords Batman says to our Batman, they would have loved it here, wouldn't they? Who? Mom and Dad. Because in that timeline, Gotham is Metropolis.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so, but it is one of those stories, World's Finest, that that I think would be pretty killer to put in front of Drea and just get her thoughts on it.
Yeah, because like I said, you have those six characters. They all have psychological issues. They all have psychological issues dealing with each other. You got Batman and Superman, Lex and Joker teaming up, and then Harley and Mercy. I mean, that's just a chick fight anybody wants to watch.
Well, I mean, then you have a love triangle.
Well, yeah, there is that too. Oh, God. Technically, Batman had Lois before Superman because Lois, because Dana Delaney voiced Andrea Beaumont in Mask of the Phantasm. Mm.
Wow.
That's one I want to get to as well.
Yeah.
All right. What's the next one we got for him, Steve?
So, do you guys have any particular favorite characters from Batman the Animated Series that you like, or you like exploring the psychology of throughout the series?
I do have favorites. There's what we've encountered so far, and I think what we're in episode 17?
18? Yeah, 17.
We just wrapped up. We're wrapping up 17. Next week will be 18. There are a couple different types of episodes. There's the kind of the kid, the bullied kid who has a single, in a single parent household, who's a ginger, who inevitably is an outcast and, you know, adores Batman. There's sort of the kind, you know, the after school special kind of episodes. And then there's the kind of the villain centric episodes where you see the development of a villain. So naturally, while I don't mind those after school special type of episodes, I prefer the episodes that focus on the origin of Two-Face, the origin of Mr. Freeze, sort of these stories that really go into the, you know, the events and the traumas that they experience that lead to them developing into a villain. And of course, those episodes, while I love Batman and I love talking about the psychology of Batman, my preference is to talk about the psychology of Gotham villains. So that's kind of what I lean toward.
I think my favorite thing to do is to count up the all the redheads and figure out how many of them are victims, how many of them are thugs. I try to psychoanalyze the writers and try to figure out why they hate us gingers so much.
So what you're saying, Brian, is that you are a younger / middle-aged, not middle-aged, but almost a younger version of Roland Daggett.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, but I noticed that the art director, like whoever decided to design the various character models, all the thugs, all the henchmen are redheads. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, if they're not the thugs, they are the random person who's like quivering out of fear of whatever fight they're watching. I'm like, wow, you guys really hate us.
Well, look what they did. Look what they did to their most popular ginger. They had the Joker shoot her. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
But now she's back.
She's back.
With a vengeance.
And a psychologist.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later. Who are the characters, or who's the most interesting for each of you to analyze out of all the BTAS characters, not just the villains? Brian, you can go first.
You know what? I'm actually, I've got to say Bruce Wayne, because this is one of those cases where I found myself thinking, well, Bruce will be the least interesting character because he is just Batman every episode. It's all the other characters that'll be interesting. When really, the more we watch, we're 17 episodes in, and now I realize that, like, Batman is just a really antisocial person. Like, he, this particular iteration of Batman, he's not even really all that nice to Alfred. You know, like, he's just not kind, you know, I don't know. There's some, he's very standoffish in all kinds of ways, except when it came to Selina Kyle in The Cat in the Claw. And he's a little more personable toward little Kimmy in the new episode that we just did.
He's particularly compassionate toward young, vulnerable children, which makes sense to me because, hey.
Shut up, Brian.
It's true. She, you know, yes, it absolutely makes sense.
Which, as I was going to say before you got weird and pervy, which makes sense because his trauma, his origin really happened when, of course, he experienced his parents' murder. He witnessed his parents' murder, which is, I can't think of a bigger, most impactful trauma to experience as a child. So he, you know, I wouldn't say that he's stuck as a child, but I would, as some people might, you know, kind of, I don't know, jump to as far as a conclusion. But I think that he is particularly compassionate and even I would say...
unless you're the kid who lives under... in the underdwellers, Frog.
Well, we talked about why he didn't get close to that kid.
Then he just watched him from a distance on monitors because, while he let Alfred take care of him.
Because as I argued, he knew that if he were to parent that child, he would get too close to that child and it would be difficult to do his job.
Right.
So I feel as though you see him be more human, more compassionate toward younger children, especially ones that are victimized or ones that are more vulnerable. Because he wants to protect them and he right. wants to avoid them, you know, experiencing any similar types of life-altering trauma, which is why he takes on a Robin. Now, we've only seen that one time so far.
But yeah, and then he sends him off to boarding school.
And for some reason, we haven't seen Robin in a while, and I'm sort of wondering why that's the case. But then, you know, you're right that Bruce sometimes is distancing and kind of, like, especially with Alfred, just doesn't connect with people, just is isolated, withdrawn, doesn't really develop kind of, you know, strong interests in people. And I don't know. I think it's problematic. And I actually agree that of all of the characters, Bruce Wayne / Batman / Bruce is an incredibly dynamic character.
I'll say this, though. There's an episode called POV that deals with the cops and their different recollections of what happened. And as Drea pointed out in that episode, memory is actually really faulty. More often than not, your brain will fill in gaps. And I'm going to say it first here. I've been thinking a lot about that, and I'm not so sure Bruce remembers his trauma quite as well as we think he does. I think
he doesn't.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he has invented a really... They probably went off to, like, the Bahamas.
You're awful.
And he's like,
you died in Crime Alley.
You're awful, but you're correct.
You're
correct in that he doesn't quite... actually, research shows that when there's a childhood trauma, especially during adulthood, a child... well, the adult will remember the trauma differently or may fill in gaps, as you said. It's not to say that that they remember things incorrectly, but they may remember pieces of it that are more traumatic, or conversely, the parts that were more horrifying to them, they will completely have forgotten because it was too traumatizing.
This is what happens when you get us.
hey, it works for us. It's going to make a really interesting interview. Now, I have my own theory on Bruce and Alfred, and it actually stems from... Chicken soup? What am I supposed to do with this, Alfred?
Yeah.
Okay, now, think about this, all right? Bruce's parents got killed. Alfred has to raise him. Technically, Alfred is his father, so technically, Bruce has been 8 years old all of his life when interacting with Alfred, whether he's in the suit or not, whether he's being Batman or not. He's always going to be that 8 year old kid.
Well, we did talk about that. Yeah, there was an episode where we actually discussed, you know, the fact that that Bruce may have never gotten past a certain level of emotional growth. And from that point on, that's sort of why we see him the way he is. It's kind of interesting.
But I would say, you know, one of the most important relationships he had following his trauma was with Alfred. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important the way that Alfred treats him and the way that Alfred parented him. And we don't see him quite a lot. You know, we see that he's taking care of him. We see that he's,
The really weird thing about Alfred in Batman the Animated Series, and I realize this is because it's Batman, but unlike other versions of Batman, he doesn't treat Alfred as he would someone who raised him.
Yeah.
Bruce treats Alfred like an employee more often than not, where it'll be like,
Alfred, go hand me that thing. Go make me some chicken soup. Go
you know, I can never forget the what was it, garbage?
The Joker episode.
Yeah, the episode with the Joker where he's
laughing fish.
No,
last laugh is
interesting because not only does Bruce sort of show that he has no sense of humor, he doesn't understand April Fool's jokes. When he actually tries to pull one on Alfred, it's by telling him he's going to dock his pay for a priceless Ming vase, you know, where he's just like, I'll just take it out of your paycheck, you know, and then April Fool's. And I'm like, wow, this is the guy who raised you and you treat him like an employee. So it's kind of weird to me, but Drea has a particular affection for the Bruce-Alfred relationship.
Well, I mean, I think Alfred is doing the best that he can. It's an interesting theory that he hasn't really changed in his parenting style when it comes to Bruce developing and becoming an adult and having different needs across that his lifespan, and Alfred shifting in his role. At this point, they should be more like peers,
right?
More like, you know, close friends almost, but that's not the case. So
I'd be like, Master Bruce, you go up to your bedroom. You're not allowed to go down to the Batcave tonight.
He's like,
don't tell me what to do tonight.
This is why he's a rebel. You know, I said he Bruce is probably 8 years old when he interacts with Alfred. I would say that he's more of a rebellious teenager when he's being Batman towards Alfred, just because that's the way I kind of see it. Now, we will see, and I absolutely loved it in The Forgotten. Alfred is not good with technology.
Very, very bumbling.
Oh my God, that Batwing scene.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, Commissioner Gordon, you could almost argue, is more of a father figure to him, because he's always trying to please Gordon.
Yeah, for
sure. That's
true.
Well, because Gordon, I think that he knows Gordon represents Bruce's values, and so he knows that if he wants to continue with his mission, Gordon is really important. Why are you making a face?
I'm not.
Oh, I thought you were disagreeing with me.
I was just thinking. Gordon is the hero they deserve, but not the hero they need right now.
I hate to say it, Brian, but you really need to work on your Christian Bale gravel.
Well,
don't wear hockey pads.
Except that Batman's not the one who said that line.
Yeah. What line? Which one?
Ah, see, from the Nolanverse.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm stuck in the 90s.
Yeah.
That's sometimes not a bad place to be. All right, so you guys have said that Arkham Sessions is fully ensconced in BTAS right now, and you've said that there's potential for exploring other aspects, whether it be the films, or I really want you guys to go into the other aspects of the DCAU, because I think it would be awesome once you get at least through Over the Edge and Old Wounds that you go to Batman Beyond.
Right.
Because then you have to figure out and discuss the psychology of Bruce getting old.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let me put it this way. We own Batman Beyond the complete series.
Good deal.
So who knows? You know, it could certainly happen.
That's true. If people keep listening, I mean, it's if it's not already obvious, I like to talk about the psychology of Batman. If there's not a microphone in front of me, I will do it anyway. I will do it at the grocery store. I will do it before bed. Anyone who wants to listen, I will talk about that. So if we get through, BTAS and folks are still listening, then absolutely. We definitely get into other iterations of animated Batman.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Let's see. Do you plan on getting interviews for the podcast at all?
Brian?
There's potential.
I'm not asking you who you're going to get, Brian. I'm asking if there's...
There is potential. The thing about this particular show, because we've thought about it in the past, it's one of those situations where it's such a unique take on the series, in that as far as I'm concerned, I realize Drea doesn't necessarily feel this way, but to me, she is the person I'm interviewing every week. Because everyone else, like, I could ask writers, or I could ask cast members or whatever, but just from my own, you know, experience in my job, a lot of times writers and actors and, you know, directors of especially animated series don't necessarily always remember the hundreds of shows that they wrote or that they appeared in. So sometimes getting someone to be specific about an episode, and specifically the psychology of what that character was thinking at that moment, whether it's from the mind of a writer or of the actor who portrayed that person, it can be very difficult. So I've sort of, but we've not ruled it out. In fact, there is something that we would like to do coming up. And if it works out, then, you know, I'm very excited about it. But otherwise, I don't know. I think rather than interview these people, we would rather bring them in to actually discuss the psychology.
Oh, that'd be, again, that'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Let's see. What else do we have for you guys? Are there anything that you don't want to see from any of the characters, like the main characters?
Anything that we don't want to see?
Yeah. Like a specific, like say a character does a turn where you're like, oh no, they took this route with them.
Oh, you mean in terms of the writers?
In terms of the character portrayal, yeah.
Gotcha. That's probably more for you, Dre. Like, you know, having seen what you've seen so far,
yeah,
and thinking about, because you in our current episode or one of our current episodes, you talk about there's sort of a checklist of things that are going off in your in your head. Are you reaching that cusp where you're like, oh, please don't show signs of this one?
Well, yeah. So what Brian's talking about is for some characters, I do talk about potential diagnoses that I would give the character. We've talked about the Joker, for instance. I think it was the second episode we was it Christmas with the Joker?
Yeah.
That we really went into that. And you know, I talked about some potential diagnostic characterizations of the Joker just from that episode. And one diagnosis that comes up for the Joker just overall is antisocial personality disorder, which is you know, really quite a rare but go-to diagnosis for you know, usually a criminal who enacts you know, violent types of behaviors and is rule-breaking, doesn't have empathy, is out for themselves. So I also in that particular episode mentioned borderline personality disorder, which is that the one that the two that we talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a completely different type of diagnosis, which is characterized by more of an emotional person, so very hyper emotional and draws people in but can't tolerate closeness, so then pushes people away. And so from that, just within that episode, I talked about these two competing diagnoses. And that was probably the most realistic we really got with kind of taking a fictional character and applying real psychopathology to them. And that's what I did it with a lot of my work, that you would have two competing diagnoses and you would pick one with the evidence that you have and you know, your the time that you spend with the patient, and you would have a potential list, but you would go with one. And so to answer your question, I think one of my worries, I've seen all the episodes at some point or another, of course, but one of my worries is that I will choose a diagnosis that really fits a character. And then later, as you know, as we learn more about a character, or if a different writer wrote them differently, it would just not fit the criteria anymore. And that's not terrible. We can always discuss what happens when that happens in real life, but it's certainly something that that I worry about happening.
You can't be sued for malpractice in real life if you're analyzing a cartoon character.
No, and you can't be sued if you do have you learn more information and you change a diagnosis. That actually happens.
That's right.
But if I would like to think that I know these characters well enough that won't happen here.
Right.
Yeah. No one's going to come up and name him Jack Napier after all. All right. Where can they find the Arkham Sessions online? The listeners and all that good stuff.
Well, we are on iTunes. You can also find the player over at Drea's website, underthemaskonline.com. Just about any place where you can plug in an RSS feed, you can find us.
Awesome.
We're also, we are on Twitter. We are at Arkham Sessions. We're on Facebook, so you can like us there. And we do a lot of interacting with folks. So we always encourage questions or comments. We encourage people to watch the episode ahead of us if they can, so that they can get in their own questions or their own observations. And that's actually ended up spurring some pretty interesting conversations on the podcast.
Yeah, I really like when people actually contact us and ask us questions or make comments. I always like to clarify that when you listen to the podcast, you absolutely are not, it's not like you're required to see the episode or if you don't have a chance to see the actual BTAS episode we're talking about, because we do a fairly good job of summarizing what happens in the episode when we talk about it. And something that I try to do as often as possible is talk about and mention places that people can get more information or help regarding a topic that we've covered. So, for instance, resources, the suicide prevention hotline, more information about post-traumatic stress disorder, more information about how to obtain treatments. So in line with my general professional mission to try to broaden the public awareness of psychology, I always try to include some kind of resource or information at the end of the episode to tell people how they can learn more about that topic.
Yeah, because that's sort of the whole point of the show. Anyway, it's fun to look at the Joker and try to psychoanalyze him, but really what it comes down to is it's real psychology. Real people have these sorts of diagnoses, whether it's a mental disorder or just, good or bad mental health. So it's important to understand that real life people have this psychology attributed to them as well. So always looking to help out.
Awesome. Now, Brian, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that Andrea was in the Necessary Evil DVD. When I saw you pop up, I'm like, hey, I know her. What's she doing on there? So you all can see her there, as well as, Brian said, underthemaskonline.com and on the Arkham Sessions Twitter and Facebook page. You can also find her in comic form. Now, how did this come about, that you are now the new 52 Batgirls psychologist in the comics?
I'm just still in awe and still sort of experiencing just how awesome that was. But a couple of years ago, Gail Simone, who of course is currently writing the new 52 version of Batgirl and has written for Birds of Prey and is just a very talented, well-known writer. She had reached out to me to ask me some questions about an interaction she was planning to write between Barbara Gordon, aka Batgirl, and Barbara's therapist. And so at the time I consulted with Gail and gave her some information, gave her some scenarios, some kind of realistic dialogue that would happen between a patient and a psychologist.
Specifically one that, because Gail opted to keep the famous gunshot to the spine.
Right. So you mentioned the victimization of Barbara Gordon back from The Killing Joke.
Right.
This is when the Joker showed up at her house and shot her, within the original story arc, she's paralyzed from the waist down due to this injury. In the New 52, while the Killing Joke incident with her and the Joker still happened, this new arc is that she recovered physically from the injury. So she was in a wheelchair for some time and was able to recover and walk again. Now,
Andrea's dealt with real life trauma victims from Afghanistan and Iraq, so it made sense to ask her, how did you deal with these patients, you know, recovering from these traumas?
Yeah. So Gail knew that I had worked with soldiers who had returned with physical and psychological injuries, and something that she already had down was the physical recovery. She had already written that part, but she was working on the psychological recovery and decided to include a mental health clinician who would aid Barbara in working on some of the flashbacks that she was having and the difficulty with these, you know, awful traumatic memories of what happened to her. And it was, you know, honestly, at the time, I was just super just thrilled and honored to be asked for that information and to give her that feedback. And then as an incredibly kind gesture, she wrote in a character with my likeness and using my name, who is Barbara Gordon's clinical psychologist. So it's an issue. The first one is issue number 16. That's where we see an interaction between the fictional version of myself and Barbara Gordon. And then later in issue 20, there's some additional interactions between Barbara Gordon and her psychologist. So it's really cool.
I would think after the last two or three stories recently that she would have to come see you again.
Oh my gosh. Did you
No, seriously.
That one? I'm just like horrified.
The Midnight Man. The Midnight Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I was like, whoa.
It was intense.
Yeah, it was very, very intense. It was pretty much Batgirl meets a horror movie.
Yes. Yes, very much.
Yeah.
The cool thing is this coming weekend, Drea will be on a panel with Gail for the first time since that happened.
Sweet.
Talking about Batgirl and the trauma and the recovery.
Where's that going to be at?
WonderCon in Anaheim.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Steve, any more questions?
Oh, I think you guys pretty much rounded it out.
Awesome. All right, we would like to thank the good Doctress and Brian for taking the time to chat with us in this latest Legends of the Dark Knight interview. We'll ask you to hold the line. Steve and I will be back after this.
Oh my God.
Master Bruce, I... Ms. Gordon, I see you've discovered our little secret. Yes, I admit it. I am Batman.
Brian was formerly Yogi Bear. How did this happen?
I was in high school and needed a job.
That's it?
Yeah. I mean, I lived 30 minutes away from a theme park. And so during the summers, I would spend, you know, in the summers between, I think it's April. Yeah, between April and October, I would go and work at Paramount's King's Dominion in Richmond, Virginia, or just outside of Richmond, Virginia, in Doswell. And, you know, Hanna-Barbera characters were, you know, you could run into a number of characters. It was either Hanna-Barbera or Star Trek.
Now, were these the non-talking?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, do you have a Yogi voice?
No, we're not allowed to talk, thankfully.
Can you do a Yogi voice?
That's what I was asking.
I think everybody can do a Yogi voice.
I can do it. Go ahead, do it.
Really?
Yeah, please.
Well, okay, I'll do other people. I'll do what I heard.
Yes.
A million times a day.
Oh, please do Pussyfoot or whatever.
What?
What's the other guy?
Boo Boo?
No, not Boo Boo, the panther guy.
Oh, Snagglepuss?
Yeah. Oh, Snagglepuss.
Do Snagglepuss.
Snagglepuss was like... exit, stage left, even. He would do that.
Yeah.
But then Yogi would be like,
"Hey, Boo Boo, we're gonna go get a picnic basket."
And then, you know, that sort of the creepiest story that ever happened to me is I was walking on the street with my escort, and a little kid walked up to us and you know, was like knee height level. So I would bend, I bent down, and I was, you know, listening to the kid talk to me, and the kid was like, "Yogi, Yogi, you know, sometimes me and my daddy play you, except we're the bad Yogi and Boo Boo. We're Yagi and Baba." And then, and the dad's just sort of like, "Oh, shut up, shut up." We're like, "What are you doing to this kid on the weekends? You're Yagi and Baba." But yeah, that was kind of
creepy.
Yeah. Like, we're just like you, except we're the bad ones. Oh. But
that's where you got to call Child Protective Services.
That was one of the best jobs ever, except for the multiple concussions and dislocations, and, you know, stuff like that.
"Hey, yo, Boo Boo, I just crashed into this tree."
Yeah, that's see? Good. Yeah, it's a good one.
Something that that I try, one of the things that I find to be the most entertaining is just to have Brian do voices while we record the podcast. Many of them actually don't get onto the final cut, because they're not all relevant, but I don't know. A good 5 minutes is just making him do voices. just to entertain me, just to please me. He does a good, I think he does a good BTAS Batman.
No.
Yeah, you do like an, when we were doing the Harvey.
Well, the thing Harvey is, like, stuff. This mic is, it doesn't have a very good bass, like a low end. So you can't get a good.
Good one, but
or if you're doing the Christian Bale,
you can't do a good one.
Scary.
Yeah.
Well, that was sadly anticlimactic.
See, that's good.
Well, that's a good one.
That's a good
one. That is,
thank you.
That is also a very legendary outtake.
A disgrace to the name Joker. Why, in my day.
Hi, my name is Dr. Andrea Letamendi, clinical psychologist.
And I'm Brian Ward, nerd. And we want to invite you to listen to our new podcast, The Arkham Sessions.
It's a podcast dedicated to the fun
and geeky
analysis of Batman the Animated Series, episode by episode.
We pay tribute to the writers and the stories of the animated series,
while also exploring the very real psychology behind Gotham's rogues.
And maybe even its heroes. All of this and more
each week
on the Arkham Sessions
at underthemaskonline.com.
I give the punchlines around here. Got it?
All right, Steve and I are back on this Legends of the Dark Knight interview. I want to thank Dr. Andrea Letamendi again and Brian Ward as well. It was an interesting discussion and interesting opinions on Batman. I almost want to see if I can get Brian back for a pullback origin, since he kind of went into comic fan rage mode when it came to Batman and Superman.
That would actually be kind of funny.
Yeah, that would be.
Pullback after dark.
that might work, actually. There you go, folks. The latest interview with Legends of the Dark Knight. We will be having episodes 31 and 32 coming soon, most likely the end of May, beginning of June. I know it's been since February, since we did episode 30, but a whole bunch of stuff has come up, and we're in super planning mode for the Year 5 celebration coming up and everything else with GCRN. So we apologize to the listeners for not having episodes 31 and 32 out by now, but it hasn't been feasible, because Steve and I have been mass recording my epically long Batman spotlight for the pull bag. But we will get to it, and Legends will be working stuff soon. As Brian said in the interview, you can find the Arkham Sessions on iTunes. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter. The Facebook page is The Arkham Sessions. The Twitter is just at Arkham Sessions. My Twitter is TFG1Mike, and yours is?
SCP21.
All right. Thank you for listening. Until next time.
I can't decide without...
Oh, no! It's gotta be here! It's gotta... I have to have it! Well, Batsy, it's been a hoot, as always. But I really must run. May the floss be with you.